Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I'm your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator at Living Sober. And today I am joined by Simon Kozak. Now, Simon is a husband, a father, a grandfather, a friend, an athlete, a former advertising guru, communications manager, award-winning marketer, and of course, he is sober. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you. I feel welcome. Thank you.
Did I pronounce your surname correctly?
You did, indeed. Yes, it's Polish. So my father came over to England after the Second World War as a captain in the Free Polish Army.
Wow. Okay. It's got those good hard consonants, Kozak. Anyway, great to chat with you. We've communicated a bit over email, but never face-to-face, so this is a treat. But just tell me, how long's it been since you've had a drink?
Just over 10 years, close to 12, actually.
And is that long enough now that you have no cravings? Where are you at with your recovery?
I haven't had those for years. I think in the early stages it was very much about prevention and caution, but honestly I don't know, I couldn't even tell you the price of a bottle of anything at the moment. I honestly can't remember the last time I even had an empty bottle in my hand. I was thinking about that before. So now I my relationship with alcohol at the moment is I don't have one, except when I talk about it in these contexts. So now, clear.
Isn't that amazing? Because I mean, and I will ask you what your drinking was like and why you quit, but to go from that place where we were so stuck, so obsessed, so gripped by it, to being completely, I mean, I'm the same as you, I'm 11 years now. Isn't it remarkable? Do you sometimes wonder, like, how?
funnily enough, I was genuinely discussing this with a colleague the other day, that there was a time in my life when I could have told you exactly how much everything cost and exactly how much money I had, which I would mentally convert to liquid, and I could tell you how much I had at home and where it was hidden, if I could remember where I'd hidden it, and everything, you know, my whole day was calculated based on a whole set of bizarre metrics, based totally on consuming. And it's a whole load of pain seems to go away when all that goes away. But I don't want to make it sound a trivial thing, because there are people out there still struggling. So even though I can look back in retrospect and call it bizarre, when you're in the thick of it, of course, it's not bizarre. It's a whole heap of pain. So I wouldn't want to disrespect those.
No, totally. And, you know, I know you're probably the same as me. One of the things we're always saying to people is, I promise you it gets easier, but I get how hard it is. So, yeah, Simon, tell us, why did you quit? What was your drinking like?
I can answer the first question first. Why? And that was death avoidance, frankly. I'd got to a point where I was wholly and totally on my own, having savaged. I think I can't remember. Well, I must have been just around about 50, I guess. So that was following 30 years of hard drinking. So as a madman in the old advertising days, I mean, I really was a hard drinking beast, and it slowly sapped into my private life, which I totally ruined through booze. And I remember the precise moment I made the decision. I was sitting on my deck at home, overlooking a the garden and the pool, and I remember thinking, and I was surrounded by what I now call my multicolored bottle collection. Well, literally, I was sort of sitting on the floor at night, and there's all these different colored bottles around, and I just realized if I had another one at that precise moment, I would die, which would have been the truth, because in terms of quantity. And again, it's very, I want to make very clear that my story is no different from many others. And the outcome is no different from many others as well. So there's nothing special that I'm saying. I think all our stories are the same. They just have different, slightly different content. But in terms of quantity, it was very easy for me to have 6 or 7 bottles of wine during a day. Start the day with half a bottle of Chardonnay in a tumbler topped up with 2 or 3 inches of vodka, and keep going throughout the day, wake up in the night and continue. So, and then put some work in the meantime. And I'm not one of these people that believes in the concept of fully functioning alcoholic. I think that's nonsense. I think you either are. You can't be half pregnant, can you? You're either an alcoholic or you're not. And you're not fully functional. You're fully, fully wasted is what you actually are. And you get by on the goodwill and the tolerance of those around you. But in fact, you're not effective. You're not effective at anything. You fail your family. You fail yourself. You fail your colleagues. You fail life. And that's where I got to. So health-wise, I was a gibbering wreck. I've always, since a child, suffered from depression, although that's not a reason for my drinking. So that just simply got worse. And I just knew that one more drink would be me checking out. It would be a deliberate act of checking out, and something inside of me said, no, not doing that. And this was after one stint in rehab that I spectacularly failed. I think I own the record of being the fastest relapse from this particular rehab, which, I can laugh about now, but I think no sooner was I out of the gate than I was back on it. But for this time, when I went back in, I was a totally different animal, and I was quiet, I was humble. Mm. I'd stopped the fight, which was basically what it was all about. I'd stopped fighting, and I just said to myself, you are an alcoholic, and you will die, and your life is rubbish. So you need to get yourself sorted. So I did. Mm.
You said something inside of me said stop or no, or however you put it. What do you think that was, that bit inside of you that, excuse me, that had that final, that little voice? Because you were obviously really, really lost to alcohol, and it's a terrible, awful, confusing, depressing, just dark place to be. But that little bit inside of you that said no, what do you think that was?
Well, I'd like to sort of respond that it was some sort of noble thing and involved other people. But I'm a pig-headed Polish Yorkshireman, and I thought it was that kicked in. And I just thought, nah, if I'm one thing consistently through my life, I don't give in, I don't give up. And I believe, I understand now that I'm sober, what the positive benefits of being selfish. I mean, we talk about recovery being a selfish program, which is different from being self-centered. Mm. And I thought, I need to look after myself right now. And I'm better than this, and I'm not giving in. So to not give in, I had to give up a lot of ego and a lot of nonsense. and put myself, and as we say, hand myself over to the peer support system, I suppose you could say, that for which I will be forever grateful, without whom I would be dead. And that's why I work for Ember Carway Takatini right now.
Oh, I'm the same. I mean, peer support saved me. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, I'm just really interested in that.
So I wouldn't, you know, I don't give in.
I've never heard that line that recovery is a selfish program. Believe it or not. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of the AA, although I'm not a big basher or I'm not an evangelist, but I think that's one of the epithets from AA.
Can you expand on that a bit more? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, certainly. What I've learned is that selflessness and being humble and being selfish positively are one and the same thing. Being self-centered and conceited, which are the hallmarks of a drunk often, and being concerned with other people and their shit and what's happening and, you know, wanting to correct everything else apart from yourself, is a different set of circumstances. So what I think is meant, or what is meant for me by being selfish, is I have a deep sense of looking after myself. But it's not about conceit. It's about making sure that I'm in good shape, physically, mentally, financially, emotionally, whatever criteria you want to put it. Because once I owe it to myself. I'm the only person who's going to look after me at the end of the day. And I think, as I remember sort of writing something down at the time, which was, and I wrote it down in being a creative bent, I tend to sort of think in words and pictures, but I just wrote down, "You're safe with me," which was what is my sort of life, one of my life, no, it's not a goal, but it's one of the things that I live by, is I always remind myself, you are safe with me, mantra. Me talking to me. Mantra, that's right. And
you're safe with me.
Because that's the truth. And what it means is I have no time for people who have this expectation that someone else is going to wipe their ass and is going to, you know, get them sorted. And I really don't have little tolerance for that, because all the good people that I and you know, people that I know in recovery, and all the support systems that we have, all at their base have this. It's all about being intentional, and it's about having a plan, and it's about very small steps that move you forward, Yeah, it's about helping. I believe it's about helping others to find that little spark in themselves that enables them to make a tiny wee step that enables them to flourish. But you can't do that unless you yourself are in good shape. So a lot of people helped me find that spark. And then once I got it, I made a promise to myself that I would really look after it. I wouldn't do anything that would put me in jeopardy. Hence, the "You're safe with me" mantra, and hence my commitment to making sure that I'm always good, mentally, emotionally, financially, and physically. So that all the main criteria. I mean, I'll check myself first, because I can't help you and support you if I'm all woolly and fluffy and faffing around myself.
Amazing. I love that. So yeah, I mean, that's just a great way of putting it, and I haven't thought of it like that, and I'm going to use that if you don't mind. I talk about self-care a lot, but self-care, but it's quite a nice way of putting it. Like, you have to be selfish. It's not self-centered, but you have to put yourself first, especially in those early stages where it's so hard. I mean, how hard did you find it in those early weeks?
Well, I mean, just to go back on something I said about, not having time for people who don't think that way, it sounds a bit harsh, but I was in the lowest of that ebb. So I was a person who was unable to help myself. So what frustrates me is when people who have resources and who have, and whether those resources are emotional or financial or training wise or otherwise, and then sort of let themselves go. I haven't got time for that, because I can remember being resourceless, and I can remember the brilliant support I had from a brilliant set of peers who really helped me, sort of come back to life. And I think that's what's really, really important, is this ability to find something. You need to have help from other people. So when I was right at my early stages, I was in this totally bewildered, as you said, bewildered, resourceless, frightened. And I didn't know, even when I made the basic decision to continue living, I suppose it was, I was frightened more than anything else. I had a deep sense of fear because I didn't know, could I do it? What would it be like? What would people think? I mean, who cares what people think now? But at the time, it was really big,
Yes.
Will I get a job again? Will I be, am I lovable?
Yeah. Will I have fun? Will I be interesting?
Who am I?
Yeah, right.
But it does get better. And it's hard. And I think that's where people like you and I come in, and all the other people in the recovery community. Is this what I love about talking to people in recovery, and what I love about the whole notion of peer support is you can start a conversation easily with someone, no matter where they are in their sobriety journey.
Yeah.
Because you've walked in their shoes. And other people can start with me. You know, so you know, if you say to me, I remember when I used to, hide my wine in the glove compartment of the car, I'd go, oh, yeah. Yeah, I get you. Get where you're coming from.
So you use your lived experience now to help others, and you talk about peer support, and we're all about peer support. Basically, that's what Living Sober is. It's a peer support community. How do you exactly use your lived experience to help others?
Okay, well, the first thing to say is I'm not a peer support. I'm not in any form of frontline role with Ember. I look after all the marketing and communications, and there are many more qualified, better people at it than I am. In fact, all of them are. So my peer support is confined to the work I do with Speed Freaks, and also I sponsor a couple of people through AA. So that's my sort of direct involvement. But how do I use my lived experience professionally? At work, we often say it's a happy collision, my role, between lived experience and professional skills. And I think it's just that I draw on having made a journey, which is not uncommon with any of my peers, or indeed with the people that we serve. It's nothing special, but it does enable me to have an empathy and a tone and an understanding. And I think more importantly, a real passion and love and drive. And in common with my colleagues at Ember, what I do is heart work, because I really do care about the outcomes because of my lived experience. So it's not like working; it's heart work is the best way I can describe it.
Amazing.
So that's how I use my
amazing
my
lived experience. Simon.
But I have to be very, very clear. I'm not any form.
No, I understand. I just suddenly had this image of that version of you sitting there that final morning, surrounded by your bottles, feeling completely, like you were going to die. And if you could flick forward now to hear you and see you, where you've come to in your life, it's just so great. It really is amazing and huge.
Well, they say, as I say, I'm not an AA evangelist by any stretch of the imagination. Well, I'm not. And it works for some people, it doesn't work for others, but it's a good thing because it's a good thing. But I remember I worked with a very, when I was in rehab, I worked with a lady who's still, for want of a better word, my counsellor, I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning, called Margaret McLean, or Crystal Star, as she sometimes calls herself. Been sober now, God knows, 40 years probably. And I remember saying to me two things which have always stuck with me. The first thing she said to me was, Simon, you can do anything you like anything in this world, just don't drink. So I'm only asking you to do one thing. And that sort of anchored this notion of simplicity in my head. And the other thing she said to me, she said, you will realize at some point that you will get an awakening. And I thought, what is she talking about now? You know, I haven't got time for this kind of thing. She said, you will get an awakening. And I thought, I'm not going to get any form of second coming in my life. I thought, this is not happening. Anyway, over time, it did. And I realized that what was happening was that the real Simon was actually emerging. And I liked this guy. And I realized how much I actually disliked the other guy.
Yeah.
And how much I'd been living in all this pain and suffering. And I was a pain in the ass. I was an unbelievable, over-talkative, self-appointed legend in my own lunchtime genius. That everybody thought, what a wanker, despite some of the great work, etc. But, and then suddenly this guy turns up that no one knows. So because I was going to new environments where no one knew me, doing new sets of work, and people were going, he's all right, this guy. I quite like him. It's quite quiet. Doesn't do much. And I thought, I quite like this guy. Everything's in order. And I suddenly, I'd look at all the basic metrics that my mail was open on time when it arrived without fear. I could take my recycling bin to the curb with just one hand every 3 weeks instead of sort of staggering down the driving it.
It's still a joy.
You'd open the fridge and it'd be food in it instead of all these bottles cascading into your lap.
Yes.
And
you could rely on yourself and you weren't letting yourself down.
When I'm going to do it, and I was reliable, and I was turn up early,
and let's use the A word. We have to. You were being authentic.
I was
not this kind of guy that was this caricature.
And I would go to bed, and then I'd wake up, and I was the same person that went to bed. I thought, oh, holy hell, that was good, and I wasn't frantically checking my phone to see who I'd upset and who I'd insulted. And I can honestly say that in the past, 10 to 12 years, I can honestly say, I don't think I've pissed anybody off. It's not to say that I've always agreed with people. Yeah. Not to say that, some people were friends, we're not friends and so on.
Yeah.
But I know, and this is one of the really good things about being sober, I find, it's just simple things, but no one can ever say to me, but it was a drink. So you and I could have a right old barney about something. And we might disagree vehemently, and we might never speak to each other again. But I wasn't drunk, and neither were you. So, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And unless you've been where we were, you probably don't. People probably think, "What the hell are they talking about?" But
Amazing.
So it's just those simple things. So this new person emerged, and with this new person came this sense of calm. And simplicity. And my life is no better or worse than anyone else's. It goes like this. I've got bills to pay. I've got bad things happen. Good things happen. But it's just life. And because I don't have this distortive band of being drunk all the time, you just deal with it.
Amazing. Now, we can't have a conversation, and you are so good at articulating all that stuff. We can't have a conversation about your recovery without talking about running, because it has played a big part, right? This is why I now describe you as an athlete in the introduction. What part has it played?
Not wishing to sound like an ad man, he got me back on my feet. Puns are not allowed in this office.
You just dropped one.
Struck off. That's a pun. Get out. I'd always run a bit. It was something that I did like to do, and I think I'd done a couple of half marathons and that kind of thing. But it got reignited first time round in rehab when I really wasn't well. You know, when I look back, I was dealing with a lot of mental issues. You know, so I'd done my time in lockup wards, and I think I'd been in the back of a police car a couple of times and all that sort of caper. But eventually, when I was lying in my bed in rehab, in the full knowledge that I'd actually stopped, and it sounds a bit daft, but I knew at the time, I thought, no, I've actually stopped. Mm. But nonetheless, you see, I used to wake up in the morning thinking, oh, it's about time for a drink now, it's 4 o'clock. And then I think, no, I don't do that anymore. So what I did was, this particular rehab was located near Panmure Basin. So I got the permission of the people in charge. I said, look, is it all right if I just go for a jog around Panmure Basin? So it was 3K run. And they said, well, yeah, as long as you sign out, you're back here, and, you know, you don't come back once, you've had it, and we need to breath test you on the way out and on the way in. So, yeah. So I did all of that. And after the first 1.5Ks, the first time around, I can remember thinking, this was a shit idea. But I carried on walking, and then so I did it every morning, and I literally just got up, and it's like anything else. You know, once you get your teeth into it, it's like losing weight, or indeed it's like sobriety. You know, you get one day, then you get 2 days, then you get 3 days, then you think, oh, I don't want to give up now, because I've already got 3 days. So if I give up, I'm back to what? And it was kind of the same mentality with running. And I thought, oh yeah, do this every day. Or I would wake up and think, oh, I don't want to go out. But, no, come on, we've done a week. Let's go out. So it wasn't far. And then when I got out again, I was on my own, so I went back to an empty house, and I just kept it up. I just kept running, not competitively, but just run. And then about 7 years ago, I guess it was, I met my wife, Michelle, who is a very talented runner herself. So we started to run together, and by this time I'd started buying better footwear, and the old obsessions had kicked in. Yes. So I was measuring everything and anything I could, and and I was like, oh, I can do this, that, and the other. Anyway, I realized I was actually I was rekindled my youth, and I thought, yeah, so actually I am good at this, so we should continue. So then I started entering various races, and ended up being so at the moment I run half marathons, full marathons, so that's 21Ks, 42Ks, and then I do ultras, which is 50Ks, and lucky enough to be a New Zealand Masters athlete, and have run all over New Zealand, and running around the world as well, so competitively in Munich, been running competitively in the United Kingdom, Australia. So last time I in Australia, I ran a half marathon on a Saturday and a full marathon on the Sunday.
Simon, I'm getting an idea of your personality. You don't do things by halves. It's if it gets attention, it gets your attention. And how great that it's not that stupid liquid drug anymore, and it's the work, the support, and it's the running.
The daft thing about the stupid liquid drug was, when I look back on it now, it really was just wet stuff in a glass at the end. Oh. There was no benefit whatsoever, because when you drink all the time, there's no benefit. You know, to me, there's nothing to be had by keeping going. There's no, you can't get higher. You can't get anything. You can't go anywhere. And I often describe it to people as it just was wet stuff in a glass continually repeating itself. And it was inevitably only going to end in one place. I mean, they say, don't they, that it ends in incarceration, institution, or death. And I'd had the first two, so I was on my way to the final one. But now I refer previous comment about looking after yourself. So now I'm into this running, and I don't give up. I just don't. And endurance running, I'm into it. I'll bore you senseless. I bore everyone at work senseless.
But those medals behind you, we can see on the wall there.
Yeah,
running medals.
Yeah, yeah. But it's it's a good thing to do because there's a lot of parallels between running and recovery. And
you're writing about this, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm working on a book called Running Dry because, and this isn't an idea unique to me, but I do work with a wonderful organization called Speed Freaks. I'm a volunteer. Mm-hmm. And Speed Freaks is about running for recovery. So we operate various run groups throughout New Zealand, and volunteer coaches like myself turn up, and then we run with other people who are in recovery. So people like Odyssey House, for example. So
is there a link to a website I can put?
I can send it to you after.
Great.
So for example, with Odyssey House, we run with a group of people a number of times a week. Often people who have got some jail time through their addictions, and then they come out, they're doing time in Odyssey House. And again, they come and run with us. And it's all about all the basics of running. And there are some great parallels between running and recovery in that you need to put the work in to make it successful. It really is about one step at a time, one footstep at a time. It's uncomplicated. When the gun goes bang, you start, and then you just keep going until the end. You can go for as long as you like. You don't need any special treatment. It's better with support, with people around you, and so on and so forth. You can keep the parallels going. So I thought it would be a great idea to write a book called Running Dry, which told not only my story, but would then draw on the experience of maybe some clinicians and other people. And it may be of some use to those.
I'm sure it will, because there are a lot of people who take up running when they get sober. Sadly for my thighs, that didn't happen to me, but know that it will be valuable. Let's not go there. Look, Simon, I could keep on talking to you, but we'll wrap it up now. You are such a gift, and I'm just really, you know, in awe of your journey, your willingness to share, your ability to articulate what's gone on, the work you put in now helping others, but the fact that you keep that sort of focus on yourself, which is so important. It's really good to hear you describe how you do that. And yeah, just keep up the great work. I'll put a link to Speed Freaks up when this post goes up, and
put a link to Ember as well, just in case
if people want to visit there.
If I may just have the last word on something that you said there. It's great, and thank you, and I appreciate that. But really, my story is the same as those that are in our community, and there are many others still suffering, and my heart goes out to them. But there are also many others who have been equally and more successful in their journey, yourself included. And so I don't hold myself up as anything other than I'm still working at it.
Understood. And what a great final word. Thank you, Simon. Take care.
All right.